May it please the court, my name is Abby Osborne of Schiffer Miller Law Office, PC LLO of Lincoln, Nebraska, and I appear here today on behalf of the plaintiff, the appellant Robert Parker. The first three assignments of error that the appellant has raised are factually and somewhat legally intertwined, so I don't intend to address them separately unless requested otherwise. I think the important issue with relation to this case today is actually somewhat an application of the facts. There are few disputes as to material fact, but there are some as related to Mr. Parker's appeal, especially on the perceived as disability, and whether or not there was a violation if this court does not conclude that the requested medical examination on its face was a per se violation of the ADAAA. Parker argues that there's not evidence to support a finding that the sleep apnea policy, and I would say the sleep apnea policy specifically as it's applied to Mr. Parker, because there are some specific factual issues that make it different from ultimately the way the district court decided, whether or not it met the business necessity exception to the restrictions on medical inquiries under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Most specifically, whether or not it was job-related and related to business necessity. When evaluating that business necessity defense, this court has already concluded in several cases that must be no broader than necessary. The facts in this case don't support that occurred. What was requested of Mr. Parker was that he undergo a sleep study, which is essentially the most intrusive method and deemed by the appellee and the district court as the gold standard.
The study is intrusive, or the possibility of the monitoring remedy?
The study in itself is intrusive. Because
why? And you have to explain why.
And it's included in the record, and I'm sorry I can't cite to it specifically, but the study itself takes days. The rationale of the process.
Well, it takes days. How much time of the person being studied is, and how much physical intrusion?
It takes anywhere from 1 to several days for the study to be completed. And in terms of that individual being taken off the road, taken out of their opportunity to earn money. And that's part of the rationale cited by Creek Carrier for why they implemented their policy in their specific way, is to reduce the number of days that a driver would be off of work, essentially outlining how intrusive this is, especially when compared to what actually occurred in this case, where there was no concern.
There's no compensation during the study.
Financial compensation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's salaried or just sort of paid by the hour he drives.
Your Honor, I don't recall specifically whether or not that is, but even if he's being compensated for work hours, he's being held off the road, held out of doing his livelihood, and it is an intrusive medical procedure.
That's not intrusive in the medical sense.
Well,
I mean, that can be certainly irritating or frustrating, but that's not a remedial intrusion.
Well, subjectively, it's probably less intrusive than a colonoscopy, but to have to go sleep in a place that's not your own and be monitored by someone, I think subjectively that could be considered very intrusive.
So it's what you might call an inpatient thing, or I don't know what's involved. I didn't read the record.
Yes, Your Honor. It does. The way that the sleep study is performed is it's performed in a lab. With regard to Mr. Parker specifically, it was going to be a mobile lab that was set up at his terminal. So he's not sleeping at home. He's not sleeping in his comfortable place, and he's being monitored while he's asleep. And to argue about the intrusiveness of that as to whether or not it's medically defined, in Parker's case, there was no concern on July 1st, 2013. In fact, leading up to this request, nothing had changed from June of 2012 to July 1st of 2013 or July 2nd of 2013 Nothing had changed with regard to Mr. Parker in terms of what Creek Carrier knew, and nothing changed.
Well, counsel, I bet you're familiar with the Conroy case. I think it was cited in the briefing.
Yes.
Doesn't the Conroy case mean that an employer can have a general policy based on a consistent with business necessity that requires this kind of general medical exam of employees, a class of employees?
The Conroy case was related to doctor's notes. And so...
Related to what?
Doctor's notes, a sick leave policy of providing a medical information. And initially, one of the concerns in Conroy was whether or not it was too intrusive to make an employee list their diagnosis, which I think on its face would then conflict with Section 4, where it's specific to inquiries and medical examinations, because having to list your diagnosis for your employer before you can return to work does subject you to potential discrimination. That's the issue that Conroy was dealing with, not the more intensive and intrusive type of examination in this case.
And so you're saying the kind of examination was different?
Right. They're
We're
not
under the same section of law, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 4A.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I would say that it's D4A. I don't distinguish the section of law because it's already existing employee. But what we're talking about here is the fact that there is an alternative in Parker's case. And the district court touched on this a little bit. But the distinction in Parker's case is that, one, the policy wasn't applied consistently. The policy is discretionary. And the facts that lead up to this request for a medical examination are so contrary to the service of the alleged policy, and that they're awarding him for his safety accolades, considering him a very safe driver. He's the top trainer.
It strikes me that your arguments that you can't have you can't apply it generally to all employees. You have to go case person by person, and you have to. You can't apply it if there's a less intrusive alternative. Both of those are foreclosed by Corwin, unless our in-bank court wants to take the case, as I read Corwin, which was based on Conway, but it's our controlling precedent.
Well, and I guess I disagree because the facts don't support an analysis under Corwin foreclosing it. If you're going to have a broadly mandated policy, then it needs to be a broadly mandated policy, not a discretionary policy. And if you're going to support the use of your policy on this perceived...
What do you mean by discretionary? I thought if you have the BMI, then you have to do the study, right?
Isn't no, Your Honor. If you have the BMI, you may be asked to undergo the sleep study. And the... other policy relied upon in the record on page 319, that was cited by the appellee in support of their position, was that currently the recommendation of a sleep study is at the discretion of the physician, for example, the medical examiner at the time of the DOT physical. Secondly, then, on page 476 of the record, drivers may be required to undergo a sleep study. So it's discretionary as to who
well,
they...
You're beyond the brief now, or at least beyond the way I read the brief. I mean, if it was discretionary and there was an abuse of discretion, it seems to me he should have challenged that when he was told to take the test. Well, I know remedy isn't before us, but it strikes me that this check... that there's no remedy for discharge under the ADA here because he was discharged for refusing to obey a work order.
Well, he was discharged for asserting his rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, Your Honor. He was deemed insubordinate for doing what he did, but what he did was asserting his rights.
He didn't test whether he was right or not. And that's the argument you're saying that he shouldn't have been asked because others weren't and some were and some weren't.
Some were and some weren't. When he was asked, he went ahead and did do a medical examination, a less intrusive medical examination. He went to his physician. It's in the record. He discussed at length. That's on approximately page 498 of the deposition of the physician. She lists out what they discussed, what they did, why, what the basis was in coming to her conclusion that it was not medically necessary for him to undergo a sleep study. Well,
you know,
this is all.
This is the district court, which I thought was at issue. The district court says there was a business necessity, particularly with regard to the public safety aspect of driving big trucks on interstate highways when you might be falling asleep, on legitimate non-discriminatory reason for taking Mr. Parker out of service because he refused to comply with a company safety policy, failure to show this is pretextual. None of this is discussing whether there was an abuse of a discretionary policy. How is this argued? Are we now hearing this morning the case that was argued to Judge Koff?
No, I believe we are, Your Honor, and I'm citing my argument where I indicated.
Well, in footnote 14 of his opinion, he says there is no evidence that the sleep apnea policy is disparately applied.
The contrary to that is that there's no evidence that every individual actually was required to undergo it. The policy itself is discretionary. As to whether or not a business necessity exists, I somewhat concede that there is a business necessity, but that is already taken care of by the CFR section that prohibits drivers who have an ability to have a respiratory dysfunction that is likely to interfere with the driver's ability to control and drive a commercial motor vehicle.
Right, they now have a medical protocol for determining whether even a driver who is in denial should be taken out of service for that reason.
But what the district court didn't discuss is whether or not it was more intrusive than necessary.
That's not, Corwin says that doesn't matter, or that's not a legal requirement. It's not an ADA limitation.
But I think that is part of the analysis,
if
Your
the
Honor.
If the policy is supported by business necessity, you can't say, well, not me, you don't need to do it for me. For me, you can just do a pinprick.
Your Honor, I think that would be essential if it was for everyone within the class. But everyone within the class wasn't done in that way. I see that I'm in my rebuttal time, and I'd like to reserve the rest.
Thank you. Ms. Bogan, how discretionary was this?
Well, Your Honor, it was not discretionary. The discretionary portion of the policy, and it is misstated by counsel, the standard was all employees medical exams, and these are medical exams that are required periodically for commercial drivers to maintain their licenses. And so this is under the Department of Transportation regulations, the medical requirements. So they're required to have a medical exam every couple of years. Some have them more frequently depending on their pre-existing conditions they may have. So every driver is reviewed. That medical exam comes in, it's on a standard form, it's reviewed to determine whether they have a BMI that meets or exceeds 35. It was initially 33 when the program first came out, when the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration amended their recommendations in 2012 to 35 to eliminate false positives and false negatives. Then they also adjusted their policy up to 35 to try to make it a tighter, more narrow, tailored class of individuals that would then be subject to the sleep apnea screening, the sleep test. So it is discretionary in the sense if you didn't meet the criteria, all drivers.
Well, I know that it took some time around the country, and he was apparently operating out of an office that was not one of the first to be
correct
implemented. But correct. Within his office, once it's implemented, is
correct.
There any evidence in the record that there were drivers with BMIs of 35 or higher that were not required to take this study?
Those that would not be required to take the study that had a BMI higher than 35 would only be those that already had a diagnosis, already had treatment ongoing. So if they already had a diagnosis from, say, their primary care physician and they were on a PAP machine, the breathing machine, they may need to have their truck outfitted to give it the power or whatever to have that machine implemented and used when they're on the road, because these are all over-the-road truck drivers. These aren't local truck drivers. They're in interstate commerce, traveling all 50 states. So, yes, he was from North Platte, Nebraska, was his terminal, about 70 drivers. It was the last to be implemented. Again, Crete, you asked about intrusiveness of the study. Crete had dedicated sleep labs built just for its drivers to have the sleep study done when they come into their terminal. They're under hours of service, just like many other interstate commerce employees. They have a required rest time. Within 12 hours, they come into the terminal, they go to sleep, the study is done, they could leave the next day. So 12 hours, if they're diagnosed, and we have outside medical qualified physicians that are reviewing these studies, determining whether there's a diagnosis, whether they need additional treatment, because they may have mild sleep apnea that requires no treatment whatsoever. It may be very severe, requiring additional treatment or referral to a physician for treatment beyond a PAP machine. But they're not getting pulled out of service and fired because they get a diagnosis. This is a treatable condition. It's a very serious condition, but it's a very treatable condition to keep them in their employment. So 12 to 48 hours, and that's in the facts and the briefs. And, Your Honor, you hit the nail on the head when you said, is there evidence in the record? Plaintiff, in this case, the appellant, Mr. Parker, makes allegations that it's discretionary, makes allegations that it wasn't applied consistently, makes allegations that some employees that should have been tested weren't. There's no evidence in the record that it was not applied inconsistently.
Is she correct that the policy says may be required to?
Right, because that's in the policy statement, you may be, because it is. It is a may. Will you be subject to additional screening? Well, you may if you have a BMI 35 and above, or your physician says you need to have a sleep study for whatever reason that they come to that conclusion. So you go to a medical examiner, and we don't have just one medical examiner. They're all over the country.
What you're saying is, even though it's on its face it's discretionary, you're saying that it's applied in a mandatory way if your BMI is over 35 and you're not otherwise being treated.
Right. The may portion comes into just giving notification to the employee, because it's a form they sign. It's an acknowledgement form saying, I acknowledge that Crete has this sleep apnea policy and I may be subject to it. I may have to undergo a sleep study. But again, that's dependent on whether you meet the screening criteria. If you don't meet the screening criteria, well, then you're not going to be subject to a sleep study. So the language she's citing from the record goes to that provision.
I'm just making the point that may is discretionary. It could say you will be.
Right. Now, the portion of if you do have a BMI greater than 35, you will be subject to a sleep study unless you already have this diagnosis.
Is that what the policy says, you will be or may be?
You will be if you meet this criteria. You'll be subject to it. And that's what happened in this case. Mr. Parker had his periodic exam after this policy had been implemented. He had the BMI. We asked him to go and have the sleep study done. He refused. The position asserted by the appellant here that only a direct threat analysis can apply should be rejected by this court, because it leads to a very poor result for public safety. There's no question in this case and no dispute of fact that the safety of the truck drivers, the cargo, and most importantly, the traveling public out and around these 50,000-pound vehicles is a vital interest of Crete Carrier and something it needs to protect.
Is there a statutory argument? You made a policy argument about why direct threat shouldn't apply. Is there a statutory argument that it shouldn't apply?
Well, the language of the statute itself provides that medical inquiries and exams are prohibited unless consistent with business necessity and job related. So we have shown, and there's no dispute of evidence, that our medical exam is consistent with business necessity of safety, and it's job related. It's directly related to the job of a truck driver. And it also is backed up and coincides with the Department of Transportation recommendations that have never been withdrawn. They are still put out and relied upon by the Department of Transportation. In fact, even this year, they put out in both the Department of Transportation and the Federal Railroad Administration put out a notice of formal rulemaking again relying on the exact same recommendations that CREET relied upon in implementing its policy. CREET is also, part of its stated purpose in implementing this was to comply with the DOT regulations requiring that a driver that has a history or current diagnosis of a respiratory dysfunction condition that interferes with their ability to safely operate the motor vehicle can be disqualified. CREET, the carrier, the employer, is the one responsible to make sure their drivers are in compliance with that. And I'm not aware of any statute that's going to give CREET a get-out-of-litigation-free card on a liability incident. Well, he had a card. When they're aware of these studies, they're aware of the recommendations from the DOT, they're doing their best to comply with it. They came up with a narrow class. They pay for it, the study to be done. They built, spent their own money to build sleep labs for their employees so they don't have to be off of work. They make money when they're driving. But during their sleep time, during their rest time, we can get the study done. We give them a reduced rate on the equipment, and it actually helps their health, and they're able to keep their job. There's no evidence anyone has lost their employment because of complying with this policy, having a diagnosis, and undergoing the treatment.
When Mr. Parker was told he was going to have the study, is it inferable what would have happened if he'd said, fine, I'm going to take my FMLA leave, and he'd gone off for 12 or 14 days, dieted heavily, and come in at under BMI 35?
He would need to, and actually CREET offered that didn't offer it in that particular way, but when he said, I don't want to do this study, I don't think it's necessary. I went and saw my doctor. She doesn't think I need a sleep study. We said, okay, well, it has been a little while since you had your last medical exam. We'll pay for a new one. If you've lost weight and you're under, because he was really close to that cutoff, and you're under it, you won't have to take one because that's our criteria. He said, nope, not going to do it, not going to agree to do it. Now, the state agency, although it's not required under the statute to look at reasonable accommodation in a perceived disability or regarded as disability claim, the state agency said that was a way for CREET to give him a reasonable accommodation, and he refused it. But that would be a way for him to exempt himself out of having a sleep study done. But he was unwilling to do that. But yes, again, they're looking at the BMI, so if your weight has fallen below that and you're never longer reaching it, you would not be required to undergo the sleep study. There's no question that the expert we retained, Dr. Schwab, is eminently qualified. He's reviewed thousands of sleep studies. He's board certified in sleep medicine. He reviewed the policies. He reviewed the medical documentation. And not only that, the only other physician to testify in the case, and she's a physician's assistant, that Mr. Parker went to see, agreed with everything Dr. Schwab said. So there's no dispute of fact that the sleep study is the gold standard. It's the only way to diagnose sleep apnea. Most people that have it don't know that they have it. They don't recognize the symptoms and signs of it. Failure to be diagnosed if you have OSA creates a substantial risk of daytime sleepiness, falling asleep at the wheel, let alone multiple other medical conditions. That could incapacitate a driver. And 31% of the accidents where a driver is fatally killed happen because, and the NTSB noted this in their notice of proposed rulemakings this year, happened because a driver fell asleep and had fatigue. CREET is trying to do the right thing here, and Mr. Parker simply refused to comply with the legitimate policy applied across the board that is allowed under Conroy. And Corwin has cited to Conroy with approval and accord, but I didn't see a case in the Eighth Circuit where it is specifically addressed this type of scenario where you have a broad-based policy and doesn't meet the job relatedness and business necessity provision of that subsection before. And this would be a perfect opportunity for the court to do that and address that issue. I believe lastly, just the perceived disability claim, this court has addressed BMI as not being an impairment under the ADA. That was addressed earlier this year in the Morris versus BNSF case, where BNSF refused to hire an employee that had a particular BMI. And this court determined that BMI is a characteristic, not an impairment, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, even as amended, and that that characteristic cannot form the basis of a perceived disability claim. Also, there's no evidence in this case that Crete perceived Mr. Parker as having obstructive sleep apnea. What they perceived him as having is a particular BMI. It's a characteristic, and that we didn't know whether he had it or didn't have it, but that was the reason for the test. And his refusal to comply with that legitimate, permitted policy is why he was then terminated. There was one reference in the complaint that his terminal manager asked him, do you have a PAP machine? That was made, again, in the context of this policy, because if he already had a diagnosis, he already had a machine, he obviously would not need to undergo a second sleep study because he was already receiving the treatment and having that addressed. And Judge Cuff in the district court found that permissible. And again, I would just point out that you see repeat through the district court's opinion, there's no evidence in the record to support plaintiff's positions. Plaintiff, the appellant here, took no depositions, offered no evidence, didn't depose the expert, although they attack Dr. Schwab. Again, allegations are not sufficient to defeat a properly supported motion for summary judgment. That's also set forth in the Corwin case, and they didn't do so here. We'd ask the court to affirm the summary judgment in favor of Crete Carrier. And if there's no further questions, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Osborne?
Thank you. Very quickly, I do want to address the question from the bench regarding whether or not the policy said may or does require, specifically page 439 of the appendix, fourth paragraph, drivers who have a BMI of 33 or greater, as determined from the DOT physical completed by a company physician, may be required to complete a sleep study. There is no mandatory language whatsoever in the policy that's in the record that is relied upon by Crete here today.
But is there any evidence that there was someone with a BMI over 33 or 35 who wasn't previously being treated, who didn't have to go through the testing?
I don't believe that that was something that was specifically requested in discovery as to whether or not there was anyone or wasn't anyone. There's no evidence either way. It's just that this is the policy, and this is how it was applied. The policy itself says may, so I think we're sitting there. With regard to the reliance on the rulemaking was withdrawn prior to the request that he undergo a sleep study. The district court indicated in the order that Crete's reliance was on the FMCSA recommendations. Those recommendations were withdrawn. There was no other basis in the record admitted by the district court that was in support of that. And then briefly, I want to speak
recommendations
with
for what?
The FMCSA, which was the rulemaking procedure that was referred to here by the appellee.
Okay, but that has to do with the policy generally, not with
and
Mr. Parker.
The basis for having the policy, and the only basis within the record was something that was withdrawn
What's your evidence that 35 is the wrong cutoff?
Your Honor, I think it wasn't. I don't think that was the specific question.
Well, what's your evidence that BMI is an unreliable or irrelevant indicator of sleep apnea?
That's included in the portion of the record regarding the withdrawal of the FMCS recommendations, that it was considered suspect, and so that it had to go through the formal rulemaking procedure. I'd like to address the Morris.
So you want us to?
The only basis behind the policy within.
I don't understand the relevance of what you're referring to this case.
The basis behind Crete's policy, their admitted basis for having this policy, is on a withdrawn recommendation.
Okay, so what?
It's withdrawn because
so
it was invalid, because it wasn't supported. because it wasn't supported by the scientific evidence in that case.
So you're saying if federal regulations or policy guidance don't mandate this, it's unreasonable?
No, that's not the argument. It is that if you rely on something and you say, this is why we're doing it, and then it's withdrawn because it's suspicious, then your basis for requiring it is also suspicious.
And your case supporting that under the under this section of the ADA?
I don't have a specific case.
No, I mean, business necessity is not a standard that's that intertwined with the federal agency or state agencies that regulate you.
I agree with that, but if you say I rely on this thing, and if the court relies on a ruling from its own jurisdiction that's then overruled.
What finding or conclusion was wrong? That there wasn't business necessity, or because this was
that it wasn't narrowly tailored.
That's not okay.
That's part of the determination of business necessity.
Under what case? Under what Supreme Court case?
Under I don't have the name specifically. It is cited in the briefs. It's cited wherein we also cite the EEOC v. Walmart. It's cited within Walmart, the EEOC v. Walmart, which is an Eighth Circuit case. And then it goes on to cite several Supreme Court cases that also uphold this narrowness requirement. And, Your Honor, I would just like
to... All right, we got it.
Thank you, Your Honor.